It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The National Institutes of Health is in the middle of conducting the largest long-term study of childhood health in the U.S., and UW-Madison psychiatric researchers are examining the data from more than 11,000 children who are participating in the study. To date, they've made some surprising discoveries about how childhood trauma affects mental health later in life. They recently found evidence to suggest that the type of trauma a child experiences could be more impactful than the sheer amount of trauma they encounter. We're joined by a lead researcher on this study. Justin Russell is research assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Justin, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks, Kate. It's great to be here.
You have been analyzing data on this long-term study, 10-year study. What are you trying to understand about traumatic events in children's lives?
Sure. So the study that we're actually working with, the Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study, it's the largest study of kids' brain development and behavioral development ever undertaken in the U.S. And what they do is they share the data with lots of different researchers. It's such a massive study. So we've been able to get our hands on the data from the first 4 years, starting when these kids were 9 or 10 years old and through about 13, 14.
And, you know, in terms of what you're looking at here, we might be familiar with the Adverse Childhood Experiences Questionnaire, the ACEs questionnaire that's used maybe in the pediatrician's office, used by clinicians to learn about these traumatic events in a child's life. How does your study intersect with the ACEs score?
I'm really glad you mentioned the ACEs. It's actually that screener that, you know, maybe 15 items, a lot of people have taken it. And it asks you about different, you know, bad things that might have happened in your childhood. You know, for example, were you exposed to, you know, violence, or did, you know, one of your parents have a drinking problem, all sorts of different things. It's a list of about 15 items, and you sum up the number of items that you've been exposed to or the things you've experienced, and you get this ACEs score. And back in the 90s, and even, you know, continuing today, we found that that score is hugely predictive of later mental and physical health problems all the way into adulthood. Well, unfortunately, one of the things we've also found is that it's not predictive of any one single problem. So you can't take that score to a doctor and say, hey, you know, I've got an ACEs score of 3, and the doctor will say, okay, well, you know, you're probably going to be at risk for A, B, C, and D. So one of the things that we wanted to understand is where is the kind of the ACEs approach, that ACEs screener really kind of assumes that it's the total bulk of things that happen to you. We want to know, does it really matter what different things happen to you? And, you know, if you're exposed to different types of trauma or adversity, do you end up with different outcomes? So my biggest focus as a researcher has always been trying to understand why kids who get exposed to adversity or trauma early in life can end up with so many different types of problems. You know, you could have one kid who's really resilient and, you know, really excels at sports, school, everything, what have you. Another kid who's severely anxious, maybe even refuses to go to school. And yet another kid who's constantly suspended and getting in trouble and difficult to control in the classroom. So really, that's how this started. We wanted to kind of build off of what we understand from the ACEs work, and see, you know, okay, well, are different forms of trauma really going to be predictive of different outcomes?
So in terms with ACEs, you know, tabulating the quantity of trauma that a child faces, that you're really trying to dissect particular types of trauma and see what those outcomes might be like later in life?
That's exactly right. So it's kind of strange to think about, you know, knowing what we know about today and how much of a focus there is on the horrific things that children can go through as they're developing. But the idea that early life experiences could really affect us for life, it's actually a pretty novel idea in medicine and in psychiatry and psychology. I really only started to become a bigger and bigger deal in the mid-90s, where we started to understand the long-term outcomes. And like I said, that ACEs instrument, that ACEs questionnaire really just kind of takes a total sum of how many bad things have happened to you. And it's been a real, real major public health achievement in helping disseminate knowledge and helping broaden people's knowledge of the importance of considering, you know, childhood trauma and adversity. But now we want to kind of build off of it and see, well, okay, is it more than just the sum? Is it more than just, you know, the total number of problems? Is it really the case that, you know, what actually individually happens to us matters?
Your research group, though, was surprised. You were expecting see that negative impacts on the kids, regardless of the type of trauma they experienced, but you found something different occurred. What is enlightening here?
Well, it's intuitive, right? I mean, that's kind of how we started, the idea that, well, when bad things happen to kids, they should be, you know, universally associated with bad outcomes, you know, with mental health problems in the future. But maybe, you know, depending on the different outcome or, you know, the severity of the experience, you know, they might be, you know, different types of experiences might have different strengths of effect on, you know, on future outcomes. However, what we did not expect to find was that certain types of trauma would actually be associated with a reduction in psychiatric problems long term among some of these kids. So we kind of split the way we looked at mental health problems into two different groups. We looked at internalizing problems, so problems that tend to be focused on the internal of the self, you know, anxiety, depression, versus externalizing problems where, you know, your behavior is manifested outwards, and these kids are often disruptive, and we associate disorders like attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or oppositional defiance disorder, those kind of outward behaviors we call externalizing. And we kind of looked at how those two types of disorders, the two groups of disorders, changed over the next 4 years. And it was really stunning to us that among kids who had certain types of exposure, the highest levels of exposure to certain types of trauma and adversity, they actually declined in their rate of those problems over time.
What were those certain types of adversity?
Sure. So I'll back up a second. From the adolescent brain and cognitive development study, they asked a ton of questions of these kids. And what we did was we went through every single question that they had asked them, and we picked out 268 of them that really kind of asked the kids or their caregivers about an objectively negative or harmful event in a kid's life, something that we'd all assume is just kind of universally bad. And we were able to kind of group those together and distill them and find out, you know, how they co-occurred and how they hung together into eight different forms of adversities: community threat, peer aggression, so bullying, caregiver maladjustment, like does your parent have a drinking problem? Do they have a hard time holding down a job? Are they constantly in trouble with law enforcement? Chronic pain or medical problems, discrimination, family conflict, not just between the parents, but all, you know, between siblings, between parents and siblings, poverty, and then exposure to interpersonal violence. And I'll give you an example. Community threat, experiencing a lot of violence or, you know, in your community, at the highest levels of that, at the kids who were exposed to the most threat, they actually showed a decline in internalizing problems as they got older. And that didn't make any sense to us when we first saw it. The idea that kids who live in a really threatening environment would experience any reduction in mental health problems is really stunning.
How might a child's development of resilience and their development of grit factor into these findings?
Well, we think that what's actually happening here is not that these kids may necessarily be thriving. We don't think that we've picked out just the resilient kids, but what they're actually doing is adapting to their environment in ways that what they still carry the burden of mental illness, but because of the context that they're living in, because of the environments these kids are living in, they have to kind of change the way they show it. So, for example, if you're living in a really threatening environment in a really dangerous community, it might not be very helpful for you to be showing a lot of symptoms of worry, anxiety, depression. So you might actually kind of suppress those. That's one theory we have. It might also be just that exposure to different types of trauma and adverse childhood experiences kind of shifts the timeline for when you're most at risk of different types of mental health problems. We're just not sure yet.
We're discussing this long-term study, investigating the effects of different types of childhood trauma on kids as they grow up. And we're with Justin Russell, a research assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. So, Justin, I want to turn now to how might policymakers be able to use the results that you're learning so far to change the way they address traumatic experiences of the children who are in the community?
I think that's a great question, Kate. And that's really one of the takeaways of this. I think that if I'm a policymaker, I'm probably often frustrated with psychology and psychiatry and research, because we generally kind of say that bad things happening to kids is bad, you know, and it's going to cause bad outcomes. But that doesn't really tell us, well, you know, which things are the worst? Where do we put our policy dollars? You know, where do we put our investment dollars to try to improve outcomes in our communities? And these results might suggest to policymakers that, you know, you can get the most bang for your buck in terms of positive outcomes and effects if we try to prevent exposure to certain types of trauma or adversity, or we work hard to ameliorate the effects of those certain types of trauma and adversity, like, you know, say family conflict or peer aggression. If we really put our efforts into trying to mitigate those problems, we'll see the biggest outcomes in terms of benefit for our kids.
Do you anticipate that clinicians will use the ACEs questionnaire differently in the future?
You know, I'm not sure. The ACEs questionnaire is wildly popular, and for good reason. It's really, like I said, it's really been associated with a monumental public health achievement in making the country and really the whole world aware of how bad things can affect in childhood, bad experiences can affect us long term. It's actually now mandated that every kid who sees a pediatrician in the states of at least Vermont and California, I believe, are going to be required to complete that questionnaire at least once. I think that what I'd like to see clinicians do is maybe consider the ACEs as just one piece of a, you know, broader body of information that we can get about these kids, that it's not the end all be all to know how, you know, just how much bad stuff a kid's experienced, but we really need to understand the individual person and their experiences, because the different types of things that we've been through and endured really do matter in our outcomes.
When you look at this data, are you relying on the kids themselves to recognize their own symptoms? I mean, how do you take that into account when you are looking at what you collect here?
Sure. Yeah. Any clinician will probably tell you that it can be very difficult, especially as these kids get older. You can kind of get conflicting information from parents and from kids. We actually used reports from both in terms of determining what was going on, you know, what kind of adversity these kids were exposed to and what they weren't. I think that going forward, you know, in younger kids, it can often be parents who are really better at telling you what's going on with the kids in terms of mental health problems. As they get older, though, the parents, you know, they're not really as great as the kids at telling you what's going on. That's been a longstanding challenge in kind of trying to understand how mental health problems develop or change shape or presentation, or, you know, how these problems become more or less severe as kids get older. Definitely tricky.
So here you are, you've studied kids starting at the age of 9 or 10. They're now teenagers. They're either entering high school or in high school. The study is continuing, you know, well on till, you know, they're out of high school, 19, 20. What will you be watching for and looking at as these kids grow up?
Well, I think one of the first things I want to know is, do these trends that we've identified here continue? For example, especially in the cases where certain forms of exposure to certain forms of trauma or adversity predicted a decrease in mental health problems, does that stay the same as these kids go into the later teenage years and even into early adulthood? Or is there, you know, is there more of a shift? Is this just a, you know, is this finding just a result of when we looked at these kids, or is it going to extend as they get older? That's the first thing that I really want to know about. I also think it's really, really interesting and, of course, really important to just understand the way that adversity and trauma can affect kids when they're teenagers and they're going through so much stress, and so much rapid development of their brain and their body, their social lives, their relationships with the outside world. I'm really looking forward to the data coming out about that.
I wonder, will you be able to know or track whether any interventions are helping these children?
Ooh, I wish we could, but this with the ABCD study, it's purely kind of a study of how these kids are developing. However, our research group is actually conducting alternative work, looking at lots of different ways that we can kind of take our knowledge about trauma and the different types of trauma and plug it into interventions or preventative efforts, specifically those that kind of meet kids where they're at. It can be really hard to get kids into a therapist's office. It can, especially those kids who are marginalized and, or impoverished. And we're trying to find new ways of intervening with kids that use things that kids are already doing, like video games and virtual reality, and finding ways that we can kind of take those treatments that we know work and integrate them into the things kids are already using. So we won't know anything from the ABCD study, but we can use the knowledge that we've gained here in work that we do closer to home and in the community around us to try to find what's going to work best.
And teachers and counselors and other support members in schools might want also to know what can they do better to help the children through these harmful experiences or to support kids who are in the throes of something really harmful.
Oh, I think that's such a timely question. I'm really glad you asked it. I think understanding for kids, first of all, that every kid is different. There's no uniform pattern. Every kid's experience is different. Kids are susceptible to a lot of different types of trauma, and we can all be affected very, very differently. I think that we should consider the kid before we consider the experience. And I think it's important to kind of be able to vary your approach and really think about who this kid is and what their strengths are and how they can we can push them towards resilience. And I think that that's really something a lot of our community is talking about right now. And I really believe that understanding how kids are experiencing things individually is really the way to go.
Justin, thank you so much for sharing your research. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's been great to be with you.
That is Justin Russell, who is a research assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We talked with him about his new study investigating the effects of different types of childhood trauma on kids as they grow up. The study was published this month in JAMA Psychiatry.